10 to be premiered in October, we want to play you the best of the best from our season 9. We have great interviews, great laughs, great times. So this is an hour full of the best of the best here on The Joe Show. Joining me right now is a man who has the ins and the outs of Hollywood. He's worked in Hollywood for many, many years. He has a PR agent, Gutman PR Associates. Dick Gutman is an author of his latest book called Star Flacker. And joining me right now is Dick. Hello, Dick. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, the key letters there is F-L-A-C-K-E-R. It should not be confused with anything else.
All right.
And it's actually a word that had never been used before except by my daughter. I spent my whole life doing publicity for the greatest stars in the world. I mean, I was the luckiest guy. Anyone ever wanted to meet, I got a chance to work with them. And so I started this book But they were just so wonderful, and I had so much of their wit in my mind, and I wanted to. So my daughter knew that I had been with it all, and Warren Beatty had suggested to me, I call it the way they were. He said, "You work with the greatest stars in the world, you know how they were." I said, "I represent Barbara Streisand. I cannot have a book called The Way We Were. It would look like I'm standing on her shoulders." So I was stuck, and it was hard. And my daughter, a tough journalist, came home once, and she said, "Where are you in your title?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. Superstars, legends." She said, "Dad, that's so silly. The anecdotes, there's like 2,000 anecdotes. The anecdotes are about the great stars. She said, but the book is about a very strange business that almost nobody understands, including most of the people who are in it." And I said, "So what do you think?" She said, "Well, anyone asking me what my dad does, I say he's a star flacker." And that was it.
And star flacker it has become. And over the past 6 decades of your work with all these various stars, and you actually started out when you were a teenager, age 16, as a journalist, and graduated from the film department of the UCLA, a film grad, and you kind of just fell into being into PR, right?
Absolute. You know, I have this absolute feeling that publicity was not only my profession, it was my fate. Everything in my life that turned out well was because of publicity. And what it was, I grew up in St. Louis, as my grandmother was a Pulitzer, a poor Pulitzer, but we were in St. Louis because that's where Joseph Pulitzer was. And so I always thought I was going to be a journalist. I was always a writer. And when I was 15, I was writing high school sports for the Los Angeles Examiner. And since UCLA didn't have a journalism department, I sort of wandered into the film. And that's what I wanted. I loved movies all my life. I think they make it a better world, or they can make it a worse world if they're bad movies. But if you think back, you know, the American character was sort of shaped by these great performances. Gary Cooper, anything he ever did, Sergeant Parker, Lou Gehrig, or the sheriff in High Noon. I mean, he was the American character we aspired to, and we aspired to have the charm of Cary Grant, and if we couldn't have it, at least we could love it and admire it, and that makes it part of us. And that's all I cared about. And then I was looking for a job as an office boy, because I was in school. I was supporting myself through school. And I went to this office that called Rogers and Cowan that needed an office boy. So I'm the guy, and I'm making deliveries. And one of the deliveries, the door opens, and it's Kirk Douglas.
Oh, jeez.
And I think, wait, what is it that these guys are doing? So I started reading the memos that I was passing around from office to office, and I found publicity. I'd never heard of it. And I looked at it, and I thought, this is everything I was born to do. So and by the time I was a junior, I was a working press agent.
Wow, this is amazing. Speaking with Dick Gutman, his website for his new book, you can go to is starflacker.com, F-L-A-C-K-E-R. Make sure you spell it right, .com. And also you can find the book on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, and it has a whole bunch of different anecdotes, you working with a whole bunch of different stars. And I know I've been doing the Joe Show for 9 years. We're getting close on wrapping up our ninth season, Dick, and
wow.
I get in awe every time that I get to interview a big celebrity. And now, I mean, and it's still, I mean, we have coming up near the end, we have Olivia Newton-John on our season finale, and it's like, wow. Olivia Newton-John. And
well,
Olivia
is a good friend. Everybody in Malibu is a friend.
Nice. So probably not now, but when you were in the business and doing your own and working with these big names, did you ever get yourself in awe and like, oh my gosh, I'm now the PR agent for Jay Leno, or as you said, Barbra Streisand, or whoever?
I'm trying to think back. I have an ease with people. One of the things that is that no star is ever a stranger to the public. Everybody thinks they know that person. And a lot of my stars don't make eye contact when they go through, because if you make eye contact, that person's going to come up to you. But when I was a kid, I knew I was going to do something, and we came from, during World War II, we came to California, and we lived in Hollywood. That's where I wanted to be. And I went up to the radio, the radio networks was the American Entertainment.
Right.
And they had all the big stars, Jack Benny and Fanny Bryce, Baby Snooks, and Lux Radio Theater, where all the movie stars came and did their they performed their shows in 1 hour on radio. And I would go up there and see these people standing in line. I wanted to be inside there. I was 11 years old. You had to be 14 to get into the thing. And then one day I saw this kid. He was in line. He wasn't any more 14 than I was. And I said, how did you get it? He said, well, all of these shows are produced by ad agencies. He says, you go to the ad agency office, and if you charm the girls a little bit, which is easy to do when you're 11, you'll get tickets that have agency on it. They'll let you in if you're wearing diapers. So that was my life. That was my hobby. I'd go to all the different shows. I'd go to Lux Radio Theater. Ray Milan and Jay Rogers were doing a reading of The Major and the Minor. And afterwards, I'd run up on stage. Miss Rogers, can I have your script? Mr. Milan, can I have your script? Why did I need two? But I did it, and I went to all these different shows, and I got to know the people. And I was never intimidated.
Nice. And, I mean, just speaking with you and listening to you, I mean, of course, you've been in the business for so long, but you're very personable. You're very easy to talk with. You're very easy to listen to. And
that's kind. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, I mean, along with those traits, what other traits makes you, because, I mean, in Malibu and in Hollywood and California, you got to be competing against many different PR agencies down there and make yourself stand out. And how did, when you're starting out and you did your own Gutman PR, how did you make yourself stand out?
Well, I was really lucky because the company where I went to and Kirk Cutcliffe opened the door to my career, actually, was called Rogers & Cowan.
Yeah.
This is in 1955, I think I got an Office Boy job. And in 1955, a very interesting time in movie history, the studio contract system was coming to an end. And all the stars were so excited about it because now they were going to help make their own movies. The crazy thing is that, you know, the villain in those days were the studio moguls. They were, you know, dictators, and they controlled people's lives. Absolutely true. They'd say, this is what you're going to wear, and this is who your friends will be, and this is what we'll say your history was. And Eddie and Jimmy Cagney and some of those people stood up to the toughest of all the bosses was Jack Warner. And they lived to tell the tale. And so now the business is changing, and everybody thinks it was so great. Well, the truth is, I look and see now is those moguls may have been sons of guns, but boy, they made movies. They wanted to make good movies. And if you look at the 30s and 40s, when all of this was farming, those movies were 1939, the greatest year of movies. The 10 nominees, all are classics. Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, Ninotchka, Stagecoach, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Just, you know, one after another is just great films that will live forever. And behind them, there were 20 other films that didn't get nominated. Beaugest, Gunga Din, Destry Rides Again, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, all in the same year. They were all classic movies. I mean, you can see all of these movies on Turner Classic Movies, which is where I spend my life.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, 30 great films. Well, today they're making comic book movies and they're making electronic game movies. They're not giving the attention and the money to the kind of human stories that made Hollywood part of our lives. And it's really sad. But during that time, they made great, great stars, which they don't do now. You know, sadly, take George Clooney or Matt Damon, really good actors, you know, personable stars in every way, except that each of them in their whole career will never do as many great movies as Henry Fonda or Jimmy Stewart or Clark Gable did in any 2 or 3 year period.
Wow.
That's just what it is. These films will not live forever. And I'm luckily, I have a kind of reputation of doing good campaigns for films. So I get to work on, you know, great films, The King's Speech and The Artist, and this year was Spotlight, and just wonderful. Benjamin Button's was one of my favorites. Really felt like I let the world down when it didn't win the Oscar. But those films come along. There's still some great movies. But in the old days, there was a tsunami of great movies, and now there's a trickle. You know, and it makes me sad that the book is sort of dedicated to making people remember what movies used to be and what they could be. And actually, it gave me one of the greatest honors I ever had. Was, I mean, as I say, I love the Turner Classic Movies. You turn on there, you know, there's none of those films that you can't see for the 8th time and still enjoy it and see something new. And I was asked to be, because of what I've done as a press agent, I was invited to be the programmer for this last January.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought it was like winning the Academy Award. I was honored.
Oh, congratulations on that. Wow, that's an honor right there.
Well, it was a great experience because, you know, you get to pick 4 films. So I picked a couple films that I had worked on. Bonnie and Clyde, Warren Beatty and I were, you know, basically in the 60s. I think I was in my early 60s, he was in his late 20s. So he makes this movie that changed movies forever. It was, you know, it was a seminal movie that ever after it was reflected in the movies that people chose to make and how they made them. And so I'm I tried to take those four movies and watch them before I went on for the interview with Robert Osborne. You know, you have to, you're matching knowledge with great historians. And I'm not a historian. I'm an anecdotist. I remember every anecdote from my life. And there were, you know, it was like walking through a diamond mine. There were, you'd step around the anecdotes that you remember. And when I was watching them, I saw new things in them. Like when I was watching Bonnie and Clyde, I've seen it, what, 20 times as I handled it, and I see it whenever it comes out. And I'm looking at this, and I said to my wife, listen behind the scene between Gene Hackman and Warren Beatty as the Barrow Brothers. When they meet each other again, there's this very big scene. I said, listen, what's behind them? She said, what? Nothing. I said, that's it. There's no music. There was no soundtrack in that. Except I remember, you know, the wonderful Earl Scruggs banjo music that was every escape. But it was only during the escapes. So I called, am I crazy? You didn't have a score for this film? He said, you're just getting that. I said, yeah, I just, on the 21st viewing, I just realized you didn't have a score. And he said, well, what happened was, he said, we did have a score. And Arthur Penn, the director, had to go off on another film, so Warren was doing a post-production. And he's listening to this music in the score. He says, it was a beautiful score. And he says, this is wrong, because this film was not sympathetic to Bonnie and Clyde. You know, it wasn't. You weren't pulling for Bonnie and Clyde. You were watching their tragedy. And he said the music was sentimentalizing it. You know, music always tells you you're in a scene. And he said it was giving the film the wrong thing. I wasn't trying to make you for them. I wanted you to understand how this could happen, this tragedy. And for me, what a gift that was, to make a discovery about a movie I was intimately involved with, what, 40 years later. It was really quite extraordinary.
That's neat. Speaking with Dick Guttman, starflacker.com is the website to go to and check out his new book. And, I mean, it's just top of the pages that we're just talking about here. I mean, you got to get the book to go into how Hollywood used to be. And you did make a mention about how things have changed over the decades. I mean, nowadays, yes, it's not, we're losing that great movie Hollywood capture on the big screen. And is there anything else that you've experienced over the six decades of working in Hollywood, and you still do, and you still are a PR agent in Hollywood, that you are currently going still, but have you seen anything over the past 6 years, or 60 years, sorry, that, not like you said before with the movies, but anything else that's changed really in Hollywood?
That hasn't changed?
Things that have changed, yeah.
Things have changed. What hasn't changed is that if you create a character that the audience identifies with, you can tell them a beautiful story and hold their attention and maybe change their lives. That hasn't changed. They just don't do it as much anymore. Mm. You know, you look back on the golden age, most people think, oh, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Golden age actually went on until about the early 80s, which is not to say there was not great films made afterwards or great movies made afterwards. But the flow of movies that was coming out stopped being personal. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've seen, I hope your viewers watch Turner Classic Movies. And if they don't, do me a favor and turn it on, and you'll find joy there that we used to experience. It used to be part of the American ritual. We'd listen to the radio shows every night from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. That was our entertainment. And on Saturdays, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, we went to the movies. And it held. It was the glue that held our country together. You know, the people on there, with Jimmy Cagney was, you know, had the guts that we all wanted to have. And if every one of those stars meant something special. When I was 22, I did something that sort of messed up my life, and I was set up in publicity that I could have gone on doing it. But I took off for Europe because I wanted to sort of rediscover myself. So I get there, 22, and I figure I can pick up jobs in movies that have been there. So I landed on a movie called Love in the Afternoon, Billy Wilder with Gary Cooper, Audrey Hepburn, Marie Chevalier, and in Paris. I mean, how much better could you be? You're 22. I was only making $75. But I was in Paris. I was working with Audrey Hepburn and Billy Wilder and Gary Cooper. And they were treating me like an equal. And then they knew the job I was doing was important to their film. And my great luck was, I mean, I was in a position to be the press agent on the film. I was the assistant press agent. But the actual press agent on the film was a really good writer. He was intimidated by these people. I wasn't.
Jeez.
And so I had all the audacity that you needed. And so I would go in there, and really great professionals accept that you know your job until you prove you can't.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky. And I had, you know, and then that led to my meeting my wife. I mean, I owe that to publicity.
And I gotta say, for a Hollywood marriage, that's a long time. Like, that usually, I know it's usually celebrities or whatever else, but in Hollywood, that's pretty good. 55 years.
We've been. It'll be 58 this year.
58. Wow! Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, and we're both, you know, sort of rambunctious personalities. My wife is German. I mean, everything. There was nothing in the world. There's a million to one chance I would meet her, and a 12 billion to one chance that I would secure as my part. But what we had was, I think, affected by the fact that she worked very closely with me with these people. And the one thing that you have to do to work with them is to enjoy what you do. And for me, it was impossible not to. I mean, people like James Mason and Peter Ustinov, and we handled all the Brits, Michael Caine and Roger Moore, and these people were fascinating personalities. The best thing is they were on the screen. It was even more when they were off the screen.
Uh-huh.
And it was just so much fun. So what we learned in our marriage was we need to make continue if we kept having fun.
Nice.
So,
I can
always make her laugh. More important, I can make her make me laugh.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Now, I want to ask, because you're saying about all these stars that you've worked with and these celebrities, how equal they made you feel, how they are basically very nice and kind to you. Have you ever come across a strong-headed celebrity? The opposite end, where their nose is so far up the air, maybe, that they think they're too good for their own good.
I mean, one that comes to mind was Rex Harrison. Rex was very imperious, and I mean, he was a great actor, but I don't think he ever really knew who I was. I remember thinking he won the Academy Award for My Fair Lady, and so the press agent is backstage, and you're taking him to all the media and everything, and I'm leading him around. I caught him looking at me, and it looked sort of said, "Who is this guy?
Oh, you know,
who is this?" And that was the big impression I had made on him. But most of them became friends. And, you know, James Mason, one of the, I think, probably the most fascinating of all the people that I worked with, because, you know, he had a kind of, on his roles on the screen, you were sort of afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, he liked that, because James, one of the things with James was, he was perfect in every way. His hands were like sandpaper. There was something about his hands, it was like rubbing your hand over a Brillo pad. And I think he was sensitive about it, because he would intimidate people not to put out their hand to shake.
Oh.
You know, I never saw anybody really put their hand out to James, because he was sort of frightening. But it was witty, and he'd do these terrible practical jokes. One time he's making a film in Asia, 3 o'clock at night, the phone rings. "Yes, Dick, it's James." I said, "James, what?" And he says, these costumes they have me in for these photos, I don't think they work. You have to get into this." I said, "James, you know what time is? And he said, yes, 3 o'clock there. And I said, yes. And he said, I thought you were, I would catch you before you go home. I said, 3 o'clock in the morning. And he says, oh, I didn't realize that. I said, really? Then why'd you call me at home? And then I didn't want to hear his laugh. I slammed down the phone. That was James Mason. And your life was always like that with him.
This is great. It's the vivid decades of Hollywood's glory inside the golden age of Hollywood. Star Flacker is the book. We could speak with Dick, I mean, like a whole show, and get all these great anecdotes too. But I want you to go get the book on Amazon.com. It is a truly well-written, it's a gem, it's funny, it's great information and how Hollywood was back then. And Dick, I want to thank you very much. I'd like to get you on another time and talk again more, because we can just keep on going.
I would love to do it. And I have two things I would love of your audience. First, thank them for, you know, having listened to me prattle on. But I'd love you to start looking at Turner Classic Movies. I have a Lewis Nelson, who made one of the greatest war movies of all time, All Quiet on the Western Front. And the other night, there were Turner Classic Movies running the German films. And that same year, the German director, G.W. Pabst, had done a very good film that was equally powerful. I mean, that's the film that was made, 70 years ago, wow, before I was born. And to this day, I couldn't sleep that night because it was so powerful. And if you go there, like, you visit old friends, movies that are old friends, see new old movies you haven't seen, it really opens your eyes in a way that Hollywood's doing anymore. I'm so sorry to say that.
No, but, and it's true, and we can get even a new perception even on the older movies that we have seen that we may have not noticed before, like yourself, like you say, with Bonnie and Clyde, and just noticed a little of something of the soundtrack and the score, and there was nothing there. And we can probably find stuff that we haven't seen before either and just open our eyes and ears to it.
Well, Joe, you just came off of my studio.
Oh, sorry, I said we should also be looking, when we watch these Turner Classic Movies and these older movies, to keep an open eye and ear, even if we've seen the movie 100 times, because we could always be experiencing something new that we've never seen before.
Well, that's a very important thing. In fact, when I was watching these movies, I was bringing to Turner Classic Movies, I saw new things in them, like with the music with Marn. But on Love in the Afternoon, which is Gary Cooper and Audrey Hepburn, Billy Wilder's directing them. Gary was very definitely way too old for her for that film. There was no question about it. He was 56, she was 26.
Right.
And what I didn't realize, and what Robert Osborne told me as we saw, was that Gary already had the cancer that would take him, and it was working him hard. And so by the time they got to making the film, he looked older than he had when they decided to do it. And I was very aware during the film that Billy Wilder and the cinematographer, Bill Millar, would really careful in the lighting of the love scenes between them. And in looking at the film again, I saw why. They kept dark shadows on him, so you never saw his age. Mm-hmm. And in the first time they kiss, she moves out of light, and she moves over his shoulder. You're seeing her over his shoulder. Her face is fully lighted. His face is in silhouette.
Oh. Okay.
And it was Billy's way of keeping it. And then I started thinking of things that Billy had me do in publicity that perpetuated the very real, you know, public awareness of the fact Gary Cooper was quite a lady. And, you know, he was well known for his romantic conquest. And I could see that Billy was edging me and doing publicity that sort of supported that.
Oh.
And I saw the film in a new light. But there he was trying to take one of the great, you know, most romantic and comedic of stars, Gary Cooper, there's nobody better, and give him an even shot in this love story. So they ought. And so I was watching it with my wife, and she kept saying, oh, he's too old for her. At the end of the film, I said, what did you think? She said, he's too old for her. I said, so you didn't like the movie? She said, I love the movie.
But he was just too old for her. That's all it was.
Yeah, but it worked. Well, almost all of Audrey's leading men were twice her age.
Yeah, see? That's hilarious. Well, and they started all the way back then. And I know sometimes when the older women that go after the younger men or vice versa, and they're like, oh, my gosh, but it happened even back then, too.
Well, the woman I thought was sexiest of all the women I worked with was Greer Garson.
Oh, okay.
There was just something in her that was so feminine and so warm.
Interesting.
She was one of my favorite actresses. Oh. She allowed me to make up it to my mom all the terrible things I must have done. I think I was an awful kid. And so one time I was driving my mom, and I said, "Mom, I have to deliver something to a client. It's just up the street here. We're in Bel-Air." And she says, "Oh, no, please go ahead." So I go to Greer's house and knock on the door. She opens the door. "Dick, dear boy, come in, have some tea." I said, "Well, Greer, my mom is sitting in the car." So my mom's sitting there. Her very favorite film was Mrs. Miniver, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Woman's dignity and beauty is never shown in any other film. And she's sitting in the car and there's a tap on the window, and suddenly Mrs. Miniver is inviting her in for tea. It made up for all the bad things I'd done.
You were absolved on that very moment there.
It was the first time she realized I had something to do with movie stars.
Oh. Well, Dick, go ahead.
I'm delighted to have been able to visit with you guys, and let me know anytime you want to discuss further.
Oh,
there's 2,000 anecdotes I haven't told.
Oh, no, definitely will. Well, when season 10 comes along, we got some great things happening along there. We'll get you back on for sure, Dick.
That would be great.
All right. Well, thanks very much to Dick. Again, starflacker.com is the website. The book is called Starflacker, FLACKER. You can buy it now on Amazon. And don't go anywhere. We're going to be back right after this here on The Joe Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Barker, and I invite you to come on down and hear Joe help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Hey, you're listening to The Joe Show, and I'm Jerry Springer.
Celebrity, and he has his mom with him as well. And well, let me just say this. First of all, March 30th of 2016 and prior, Anthony Lawrence Ruffino, just a regular guy, works two jobs, does hip-hop dancing, loving life. Life is good. And then March 31st comes along, and you go to a medical clinic in Niagara Falls. And Anthony, tell me what happened before you got inside. What did you see outside of the clinic?
I saw a big, big stretch limo.
A big stretch limo?
Yes.
Okay. So, with this big stretch limo, what did you think?
I think Steven Tyler.
You thought Steven Tyler was even in there before you even knew?
No.
Oh, no. What did you think maybe beforehand? Why is there a limo there? Do you know why?
No idea, right? No idea.
Mom, do you know why there's a limo there or anything else?
No idea.
So you go do your regular stuff, I guess it's a regular day for you guys, right?
Yeah, no, we go there once a year just to get my support patios from work because I work at the casino.
Oh, okay. So perfect. Okay. So then you just go there and it just happens to be the same day you walk in. And like you said, who was there?
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler. The Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
The Steven Tyler.
The Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
T-A-T. Yes.
Oh, Steven my gosh. Tyler. Okay, so Steven Tyler is there. Now, when you walk in, do you recognize him right away? You know it's him?
Right away.
You know it's him?
Yeah, because I saw his ponytail.
Oh, that's what gave it away.
Yes.
Okay. So are you a huge Steven Tyler fan?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
The biggest.
What's your favorite Steven Tyler song?
Walk This Way and Sweet Emotion and that's it.
Sweet Emotion, Walk This Way. Lots. Awesome. And you actually do a little dancing and monologue with Walk This Way, which we're going to show on the video that people can go to the website and see and everything else. But, okay, so you're in. Now let's go back to the medical clinic here.
Okay.
You're at the medical clinic, you're with mom, you see Steven Tyler, what do you do?
I was freaking weird out. I was going crazy.
Yeah. Do you go to Steven Tyler or does Steven Tyler come to you?
Yes, there's another kid came to me.
He came to you.
He gave me the biggest hug, and I was in tears. Well, I was screaming, and Steven Tyler is here.
Yeah? And he asked you if you're going to his show.
Yes.
And were you going to his show?
No.
Why?
Because we didn't have no tickets. We bought some tickets.
He was sold out. Okay.
And the best part.
We tried to get tickets, but it was sold out. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And the best part, he says, "You're coming to my show. I'll make it happen."
Really? Even though he sold out, he said, "You're coming to my show."
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get some pictures with Steven Tyler. Yes. And he's there, and you're getting to go see the show. You must be excited.
Yes.
Yes. So now you're going to go see the show. It's at the Fallsview Casino, the Avalon Ballroom. And then you go, let's talk about going to the show now. So you get passes, backstage passes?
No, well, side stage.
Side stage passes. That's what we got here. The side stage passes here that you ended up having. And this is actually what?
The song list.
The song list that he performed
yes.
that night. Okay, we awesome. And show. Oh, look, I see he got Walk This Way on there as an encore.
Yeah, yes.
So what did you do at the show? You were on the side stage, but what did you do?
Well, we were on side stage, and then somebody coming goes.
Yeah.
And
what did Steven say?
What did he say? What did he do?
Come with me backstage.
Come on stage.
Okay, so what did you do on stage?
I played the maracas.
You played the maracas. Nice. Now, do you remember what song you played the maracas on?
Yes, I do. Sweet Emotion.
Sweet Emotion.
Yes.
So you're playing the maracas.
Yes.
You're there in the Avalon Ballroom to a sold-out crowd.
Yes.
How did that feel?
$1 million.
Like $1 million. It was amazing.
Yes.
Now, you also are a dancer, so you're not a stranger to entertaining in front of audiences.
No.
Nice. So then I even seen pictures, because you've done a lot of interviews on TV, on radio, on newspapers. You're world famous, right? You're from Niagara Falls, right?
Welland.
Oh, Welland. Okay, so from Welland, now you put Welland all over the world.
Yes.
Okay, because of doing this. And so he's even there, like, next to you and getting pictures taken and whatever else and singing Sweet Emotion and that stuff. So after that's all done, do you stay by the side stage the whole time and watch the show?
No.
You watch the whole show.
Yeah. Oh, you watch the whole show? Yeah, you watch the whole show? Then what happened after the show? Did you get his autograph or anything?
Well, I didn't meet him after the show, but I guess he probably left.
Oh, okay, yeah.
After the show, and I didn't...
And that was that. But you saw him all before the show, you hung out with him,
got
pictures taken,
yes.
And he's one of your favorite celebrity musicians.
Of all times.
Of all times.
Yes.
What did he say to you when he left the clinic, Anthony?
He says, I'm not here for my blackface, I'm here to meet my...
It's okay, yeah. No, it's okay. It's emotional.
I'm here to meet my new buddy, Anthony Ufino.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See?
He said that on the stage. Anthony's in the house.
And he said that in the everything else. That is amazing. And for people who can't see on the radio here, that it is very emotional. Anthony's tearing up a bit, and that's okay. And that's good. It's good tears, right?
It's
good
happy tears. Happy
tears,
yes.
And... I know that you like him so much that we were talking off air that you and mom are maybe going to go try to see him again.
Yeah.
Yeah? Where are you going to maybe see him?
I'm going to see him in Nashville.
Yeah.
See him in Madrid.
He's playing Saturday night at one of the concerts we're going to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And now that he's doing country music, because that's what he's doing. He's now in Nashville. Yes. Right? He's doing country. Do you still like his country music?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you like him?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even though he was rock star, you still like him as a country star?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm a big country fan.
Oh, you like country?
I love country.
Nice. Who are there other singers that you like?
Oh, like country?
Country or anyone?
Well, please, Gary Edwards.
What other singers do you like?
You like Michael Bublé?
Michael Bublé.
Yeah.
Elvis.
Elvis, nice. And I know that on Facebook and on the video that we're putting up on the website, on JoeCrawfordLive.com, through the JTV network, and then also through the radio station, that people can look at the bottom of the screen of the video, and it's a Facebook page that says, "Send Anthony where?"
To Ellen DeGeneres Show.
Ellen DeGeneres Show. Is she your favorite lady? A talk show host?
She's pretty funny.
She is funny, right?
Yes, she is.
So awesome. We are going to try to get you to get on to Ellen on that. And maybe, you know, Ellen loves to dance.
Oh, yes, she knows to dance.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think I want you to dance for me, if that's okay. Are you interested in doing that?
I'd be honored to dance.
Okay. So we're going to take a break from the radio show here. If people want to continue watching on and see Anthony do some dancing, which we're going to send right off to Ellen and get Anthony dancing to Ellen, and you can do the hashtag send Anthony to Ellen. We'll have to go to my website and watch the rest of the video and see you do some dancing, all right? Well, thank you very much, and I wish you all the best, buddy. Yeah, give me a high five. Awesome. I love this story. This is just great.
Raindrops are falling on my head.
Hi, this is BJ Thomas, and you're listening to The Joe Show.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of the Inspired Parenting Radio Show, where every week we bring you empowering information from the diverse fields of conscious parenting, education, neuroscience, consciousness, health, and metaphysics to support you in nurturing the best in your children. So if you're interested in understanding what shapes your children's minds, spirits, and hearts, join me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and prepare to be inspired.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
I'm Teresa Caputo, and you're listening to the show.
Welcome back to the Joe Show on OM Times Radio, and we are so excited because the month of June, Canadians can experience the live experience of the TLC star, Long Island medium, Teresa Caputo, and joining us right now is Teresa Caputo. Hello, Teresa, how are you?
Hey, Joe, how are you? I'm so excited. I love Canada.
Ah, well, is this your first time coming to Canada?
It is not my first. There are a lot of parts of Canada that I haven't been to that I will be coming to. But I am coming back to a couple of places in Canada.
Lovely.
But a lot of new places.
Oh, well, we're definitely looking forward to it. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, I don't know what you're waiting for, because they're going like hotcakes here. You got to go to TeresaCaputo.com starting June 1st all the way through June 20th. Teresa is doing her live experience, bringing it here to Canada. And what is the live experience that they can see when we come and see you in person in June, Teresa?
I always tell everyone, listen, it's like watching Long Island Medium live. number one. Number two, what you can expect, I'm going to get my hair and my nails done, great dress, and fabulous shoes.
Hey, there you go. You do look so beautiful too. You are known for the beautiful hairdo and the long hairs and that. So because when I say Teresa Caputo, they think, oh, her nail. They instantly go to your nails.
I know. I have an amazing gift. I talk to the dead.
And you gotta look good doing it too. And it's great.
That's right. But you know, seriously, it's an amazing experience. The experience is for 2 hours. I go on stage, give a little quick speech on what you can expect, give a couple of examples on how spirit communicates in a large venue like that, and then we strictly get down to spirit communication. And I don't want anyone to be intimidated by the size of the venue because spirit, I am not on that stage. Once I start channeling, it will guide me through the arena wherever I'm performing and guide me where I need to be. So we have screens set up and cameras that follow me. So no matter where you're seated, you will feel and witness up close and personal these messages being delivered from spirit firsthand. And you will feel as if you're part of the experience. It's amazing. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. I tell people, listen, you're going to have a good time whether you like it or not. Bring your tissues, but also be prepared to laugh.
Well, that's good. And that's good to know, too, because these venues, some of them are big. I'm thinking of the St. Catharines one that's only about 25 minutes here from the Joe Show Studios. And it is a fairly big venue, but no seat is a bad seat, basically. It's wherever you're going to be guided to. And it could be someone
right.
who's at the nosebleed section. You'll go there if it guides you.
That's right. I will be right in front of you, whether you're in the nosebleeds or in your it doesn't matter. I don't know what's going to happen.
For some people, speaking with Teresa Caputo, teresacaputo.com, get your tickets. For some people who are still a little leery or not too sure of what to think of this, what do you say to them to convince them or to get them to go and come?
Just come and check it out because nothing, you know, listen, the bottom line is I'm the first one to say that what I do is crazy. And I struggled for many years of, why would someone want to even go to a medium? I couldn't understand it. And what I learned is that people are left with burdens and guilt after someone dies. And if we're spending our time beating ourselves up with a negative emotion, that does not give us the ability to heal. How many people come? I'm not asking anyone to believe in what I do. I don't care if you believe in mediums. That is not what this is about. I want you to know that your loved ones are with you. The things that you sense in that go around that remind you of your loved ones that you, oh, your bad thoughts, that reminds me of my brother, or, oh, my God, that smells like my mom. To embrace at that exact moment with you and giving you a little hello from heaven. And I feel if you leave any of my live shows with anything more than that, I feel spirit exceeded any expectation I ever would have had of them. I say, listen, I don't care if you don't even know who I am. Come and check it out. You'll have a good time.
And I know we will, because just speaking with you these few minutes, and I'm enjoying talking with you, but we are looking forward to coming to see you wherever you are in Canada, from Saskatchewan to Ontario the whole month of June, teresacaputo.com. Also, check out her season of Long Island Medium on TLC, and I know she's just wrapped up her previous season here, but there'll be a new season coming out later in the summertime, but we wish you continued success. And we look forward to having you in here in Canada. Canada opens you with wide arms, darling.
I know. I say my number one fans are in Canada. Thank you so much, Joe. I hope you're going to come down and check out the show, and I can't wait to get there.
I am definitely going to do that, and thanks, and don't go anywhere. We're going to be back right after this here on The Joe Show.
Hello, this is Tim Conway, and whenever I'm in town, I listen to The Joe Show. I'm not in town that much, but if I ever come by that way, I'm going to turn the radio on and listen to The Joe Show. So, I don't know when I'll be in your town, but listen for me, and listen for Joe, because he's so lonely. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to our best of the best of season 9 of The Joe Show. We hope you continue to have a great summer, a safe summer. And please listen every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, on OTRFM on your mobile device. All it is ohmtimes.com/mobile, OTRFM. Click on that big blue rectangular button, and it's absolutely free. No apps or downloads needed. And we will offer each week the best of the best of good interviews, good times, good fun of our season 9 that we had here on The Joe Show, preparing for season 10 that will be happening in October. Hey, you want to follow where I am? Just go to my website, joecrawfordlive.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at joecrawfordlive. Also, like our Facebook page, facebook.com/joeshowlive. Remember, hope you have a great summer, and don't be ordinary. Be extraordinary.